This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Things we're going to talk about NLACE, so I'm going to give you an opportunity to tell our listening audience what NLACE does, what your role is, and then we're going to talk about your campaign around prison disinvestment, and then the listeners will probably have some questions as well, and they can join us by calling 503-231-8187. So, Peter, tell us about NLACE.
NLACE is now, or NLACE in English. NLACE in Spanish, NLACE in English. Same word. We're 15 years old now. Back in the 90s, we got started. Basically, I had started a worker center here in Portland in the early 90s. We had some good successes. I come from a long organizing background myself. However, looking around both Oregon and across the country, efforts at organizing were not being successful. In fact, it seemed like everybody was failing. All the great organizations, great organizers, folks that I respected, nobody seemed to be winning anything. Everybody seemed to be losing. So the question, part of the question was why, and there were big changes going on. You had plants, big employers in the U.S. closing, sending their work to Mexico. The demographics of low-wage workers in the U.S. was changing dramatically. We had a lot of immigrants coming from virtually all of the devastated countries in places in the United States and in Portland as well, where people weren't used to seeing people from these other places. And I got an award. Trying to remember the right word in English, premio, it's a fellowship, and went across the country trying to find out. I was looking at who was trying to organize low-wage workers. I was particularly looking at multi-ethnic, multi-racial constituencies. Were they running into some of the same challenges we were running into? Was anybody being successful and so forth? So I got about halfway across the country and became clear to me I was going to have to go to Mexico because there was a huge influx of Mexican workers at the bottom of the wage scale all across the country in places that had never seen Latinos before. So make a long story short, interviewed people in organizations in the U.S. and Mexico, about 80 organizations, wrote a piece on challenges to low-wage worker organizing, sent it out to everybody I had an address for, got some response, and several unions, worker centers, organizing committees from both countries got together in San Miguel de Allende in Mexico for a brainstorm session and came up with the idea of Enlace or Enlace. Mm-hmm. The idea being to pull together organizations who are trying to organize low-wage workers and are identifying the challenges to success, figuring out which challenges no one seems to be working on, focus on those, and try to help the field.
So this was happening at the same time that anti-immigrant fever was reaching a high pitch in the United States.
In the late
90s,
right.
So in the late 90s, there was a lot of going on politically around recent immigrants.
Yes.
That wasn't good.
No.
Right. Understatement. And so your travels, you figured out, NLACE basically trains low-wage people to organize.
Right. We specialize in working with the low-wage worker organizations, so people in the organizations. We don't go directly into the community and try to organize folks and create organizations. Mm-hmm. We try to strengthen the organizations that are there doing the work.
Wonderful. And so 15 years, that's a long time to be
getting old.
We're all getting old, or worse. And so 15 years is a long time to have been doing this, and mm-hmm. you've obviously had some level of success because mm-hmm. you continue to do it.
Right.
So talk a little bit about your accomplishments over the last 15 years.
So we spent the first 2 or 3 years trying to figure out what the needs really were. Training was the first thing that came up, but, you know, what's training? There are a bazillion things that are training.
Right.
So we got into really looking at a couple of things. One, there were strategies. Nobody had a successful strategy and how to come up with one. Another being dealing with crises mm-hmm. when you're attacked. Mm-hmm. Another being supervision. How do you supervise a staff in a movement organization that mm-hmm. needs to be vibrant and growing and mm-hmm. belong to everybody and so forth?
And international, right? Because you're
there, right? International and national. I mean, in the United States, for example, alone, the gap between what at that time were worker centers and unions was huge. Mm-hmm. Same thing in Mexico. And then when you add the cross border aspect to it, so communication issues and understandings and so forth were huge. Racism, particularly. Predominantly in the United States, but also in Mexico. Sexism, predominantly in Mexico, but also in the United States. All of that, how to deal with all of that in ways that it can be effective and build. And the first big challenge we finally decided to take on were global corporations. So because ownership had changed and continues to, you know, you have an organization, you have a group of workers in a local community that are have to have a fight. They have to have the campaign to survive, to maintain their dignity, to advance it all, to have, you know, any kind of control over their lives, safe, healthy lives. And you find out that this plant or whatever that they're battling with really is owned or controlled by a gigantic global corporation. So how to do campaigns like that? Mm-hmm. We spent probably most of our time developing a methodology that was finally started to be successful with that kind of a challenge. Because of some of the success, so Sara Lee was one success story. We have a case study that just came out on that campaign and what we learned from it, mm-hmm. Which is hopefully be helpful to others. And several others. Punk Cook, which made all the backpacks for Land's End and Adidas and Patagonia, another successful campaign. We've had a few. Mm-hmm. Our first few campaigns were unsuccessful, like everybody else's. Mm-hmm. But as we grew, we learned that we'd never have the resources to take on more than one priority campaign at a time.
Right.
So up until the campaign we're doing right now, that all of our priority campaigns have been in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And now with the private prison divestment campaign, this is our first priority campaign in the U.S. I mean, we support other campaigns, mm-hmm. not just our priority, but in terms of what we put our staff resources into and so forth, it's one campaign at a time.
And if you've just joined us, I'm speaking with Peter Cervantes Gachi, who is the executive director of Enlace, which is a strategic alliance of low-wage workers. We have a caller on the line. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Good morning, Sean. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Peter, I really applaud the work that you're doing, but I come from a working-class white background. And the public health statistics for poor and working class whites have really been horrible over the last 10 to 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
The suicide rate has exploded, life expectancy has plummeted, and NAFTA, it seems, has just been a catastrophe both for Mexican workers and American workers.
True.
Noam Chomsky delivered a speech back in 95, speaking in solidarity with striking workers in Illinois. And he talked about the deliberate conspiracy to not enforce labor law. In other words, we have all these labor laws on the books, but they're consciously being not enforced. So it's like he even used the phrase, a criminal conspiracy to not enforce labor law. Mm. So I guess with all that in mind, how do you feel about this notion of a labor aristocracy where you have sort of an elite section of labor that's organized and invested in Wall Street. You know, they actually benefit when the stock market goes up. How do we get back to grassroots labor organizing and get away from this whole notion of, like, the Democratic Leadership Council's kind of, you know, Democratic Party that's closely invested with Wall Street? Thanks.
I think we have to focus on the problem, the core of the problem, and that isn't labor unions. Even though, you know, we get disappointed and so forth with a lot of labor unions, I think we have to focus on who's controlling the conditions that keep us oppressed, and that's more in Wall Street than it is in the halls of organized labor. The more we learn about, and not just Wall Street, but essentially, I think more often than not, we're looking at this huge finance industry complex that are manipulating government, society, and so forth in ways that keep us all down. And I think we have to learn how to beat them.
Well, I think Sean raised an interesting question, because it is clear that our representatives, the people who we elect to serve our interests, have not been serving our interests for quite some time. And so when Sean talks about there hasn't been much of a policy shift at the federal level between George Bush administration and Obama's administration. And so, you know, as a progressive, someone who thinks, oh, gosh, if I just vote this way and if I support these causes, that somehow a leadership is going to be responsive. And they're never going to be responsive, because we're not the people that give them the money to keep them in office. Right. And so I think Sean's on has a very good point. I'm a kid of the civil rights movement, so I would never tell people not to vote. But I'm realizing how wasteful voting Democrat or Republican is, you know, to the things I care about in my community.
Right. I think we have to call out the players that are actually calling the shots. Mm-hmm. And more often than that, that's not the politicians. That's who the politicians are answering to. Mm-hmm. And they don't get exposed enough. And that's exactly what has to happen.
And so let's talk about your current campaign, mm-hmm. which is the Prison Disinvestment Campaign. Talk a little bit about that.
Okay. The way we got started was like a lot of other organizations in the United States, when SB 1070 was happening in Arizona, that racist anti-immigrant law that was so famous several years back. There was a call that came out from groups in Arizona asking for help. Mm-hmm. You know, many, many organizations, including ours, sent people to Arizona to help out. Mm-hmm. It passed. Jan Brewer, the governor there, signed it. There was a meeting of visitors from out of state asking, what do we do next? Somebody came up with the idea of a boycott. Mm-hmm. But there was going to be a lot of research needed. And there was asked who had corporate campaign experience. And actually, unbeknownst to me, our staff member who was in the room raised his hand and volunteered us. But we did. We happily jumped into it and found that, in fact, behind SB 1070 and Jan Brewer's enthusiasm for it was the Corrections Corporation of America, which is the largest private prison company in the country. And we then dug deeper, found CCA and GEO, the second largest private prison company, behind not just all the copycat anti-immigrant laws across the country and states, but even more importantly, behind the increased enforcement and incarceration and deportation of immigrants at the federal level. And so that's what moved us to start the Private Prison Divestment Campaign, as we discovered essentially a collusion between lobbyists working for these two private prison companies and working for some of the major investors like General Electric, Wells Fargo, and others, in pressuring Congress to, in essence, get more contracts to incarcerate more immigrants and virtually changed the way laws were enforced so that behavior that wasn't considered a felony behavior or something you'd get jailed for now gave you a 1 to 3 year prison term.
Wow. And so the magnitude of this problem, can you give us a number? So how many people are being...
It's more than 2 million.
More than 2 million and annually?
No, more than 2 million
total.
Since, right, since they essentially changed the way they enforce immigration law. That was since 2007.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to ask, based on that, I think most of the general public think that we're on the verge of passing some comprehensive immigration reform package. I'm not sure anybody knows what's actually in the package that Congress will ultimately vote on. And so my question is...
Including Congress.
Including Congress, and probably not even when they vote on it.
Right.
But my question is, people assume that we're working on this, right? We're fixing this problem with our immigration system. We're deporting a whole lot less people. That's the public image, and so challenge that. We're fixing it, right? Like Congress is in control, and they're going to fix it.
Well, you said three things. So okay. We're working on it.
Right, we're working
what
on it.
What was the second one?
We're working on it. And there's a federal fix coming down the
federal
pike.
Federal fix coming.
Right. And then the third thing is that we're not deporting people anymore.
So of those three things, only the first one is true.
That they're working
we
on.
We are working on it.
Okay. And do you have any hope?
Let me put it this way. I mean, who knows? We do not know what exactly is going to happen.
Right.
And a lot of wonderful people are working very hard to try to... as they say, bring us all of our sisters and brothers out of the shadows, everybody with a path to citizenship, and everybody treated equally like everybody else, at least.
That's not what I heard about the bill so far.
That's supposed to, that's the intent, right?
Right.
On the other hand, the practical reality is, and you hear it from all sides, is that this is going to involve increased enforcement. So looking at what that means and looking in the language of the Gang of Eight bill and the various amendments that have been carried and so forth, and also what is going on in terms of actual allocation of money and what the policy is, the way it's being implemented now, I'll give you a couple facts. One is during the first 4 months of this year, this 2013, there have been more immigration felony prosecutions than at any other four-month period of time in the history of the United States of America. That's this year.
Right.
That's this year while we're supposedly giving everybody a path to citizenship.
Right.
We are actually prosecuting more people for having entered the country without having the right documents. So that's pretty frightening.
So are you saying that we have changed public policy to now we are prosecuting people for a felony for being in the country without appropriate documentation?
Okay. If you're in the country and you've got a clean record except that you didn't have the right papers and at one time or another you got deported and you came back maybe home to your family.
Right.
And let's say your grandmother got sick in Tamaulipas or someplace, cancer or whatever, and you've got to go see her. So you go see her, you come back, you get caught again. You're charged with a reentry felony violation. You're going to go to prison for a minimum of 1 year, and it's going to be a private prison. Before even you're decided you're going to be deported or not, the CCA or GO is going to collect a lot of money on you before it's decided if we're kicking you out of the country or letting you stay.
That's kind of appalling. Whoa. Okay, I get this now. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, LJ. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, Joanne. How you been?
I'm doing wonderful. How about you?
Rocking and rolling. Joanne, I just turned 74, and I'm still as feisty as ever.
Oh, congratulations. I hope I look as good as you when I get 74.
Oh, gee, Joanne, you don't want to look like me.
Believe me. It'll confuse them a little bit.
Yeah, really, tell me about it. Thanks for the show. Thanks for the dialogue. Good morning, Peter, right?
Good yes. morning.
Okay, can we talk about a couple of issues?
Sure.
Right. Okay. As we know, the Immokalee workers in Florida are now setting their sights on Wendy's mm-hmm. in order for Wendy's to give the workers a penny a pound more on the tomatoes that they pick.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and so far Wendy refuses to negotiate with them. All other fast food chains have already. And so will a organized boycott of Wendy's be helpful? That's the first question. The second question is your feelings about worker-owned collectives.
Mm.
As I don't know whether you remember the Republic Windows and Doors situation in Chicago.
Vividly.
Okay. Now, I understand most of the workers there are Spanish speakers, and as we all know how they were treated, but I understand now that they just took the company over.
Yeah.
So I want to know your feelings about that, and then the third question is the unbelievable, horrible housing situation that farm workers find themselves in. I was reading an article in Yes Magazine, and it breaks my heart, Peter, to see that people have to essentially live like animals and these are people that are feeding us, that are bringing food to our table. And I'll take my answers off the air.
Thank you so much, LJ. Thanks for the call.
Nothing to it, Joanne. Have a great day.
And keep...
So long, Peter. Good luck.
Just keep doing what you're doing.
Right. Oh, don't worry about it.
So, Peter.
So that was three or four questions.
Yes,
Let's
it was.
Let's see here. So,
see how good your memory is.
Okay, so Immokalee workers, they do great work, and they've got a fight with Wendy's, and I think... if they call for a boycott, we should all support it. Whatever they ask us to do, they're the ones who know their own strategy, and mm-hmm. we should support whatever strategy help we're asked by Immokalee workers. And I'm sure they're pretty smart. They've run some good campaigns, and I don't think we should go starting boycotts if that's not what they're after. We should mm-hmm. find out what Immokalee workers organization want us to do and do just that. Let's see. I'm trying to find the other ones. Let's see. We've got the housing conditions for farm workers.
Right.
I agree. Horrible. Appalling. And that's not just farm workers. I can tell you some of our member organizations in both countries, Mexico and the United States, the conditions are unbelievably bad. We have... We have seafood workers and processing workers in Mexico who are literally... indentured, you could almost call them slaves.
Mm.
The conditions are horrible. They're forced to live like animals, and we have deaths from abusive conditions every year.
Wow.
So it is appalling. Republic Window and Door. Okay, there we go. The Republic, that worker-owned businesses, absolutely. Although I think, let's keep in mind about that particular fight, they had to beat Bank of America first.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just how you can configure whatever the organization of workers and who and the business and so forth. There's a power dynamic that we cannot ignore. And those workers successfully were able to take over that plant and seize it because the public supported them against Bank of America. And so we have to keep that in mind.
Mm.
So
the community came together around the workers.
And had a much better public image, mm-hmm. More public credibility than the Bank of America had. Let's not forget, though, it was the Bank of America they had to beat. It wasn't somebody else.
Right. 503-231-8187 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation. Peter and I are talking about a campaign of Enlace, which is to force, and actually we haven't talked about the specifics of what the campaign is, but Peter's going to tell us in just a minute. Mm-hmm. But his web information for Enlace is on Voices from the Edge Facebook page, as well as on KBOO's website. And so for more information, feel free to go directly to Enlace website. So, Peter, what are the particulars about this disinvestment campaign?
So essentially what we've learned is that whether we're looking at comprehensive immigration reform or the criminal justice system, it is being manipulated by these private prison companies. If you are getting arrested and going to serve time in the federal prison system, with very few exceptions, you're going to go to a private prison. And the reason is, particularly if you're an immigrant, and the reason is because the publicly owned federal prison system is at 145% capacity. And so anything that increases enforcement on immigration, for example, or drug laws for that matter, is profitable for CCA and GEO, and they're the ones who are pulling the strings. They are owned predominantly by major financial institutions, that all of us have a relationship with. So I'm talking Fidelity, BlackRock, Vanguard, Wells Fargo. Those are the big owners, plus one or two hedge funds. And those are the ones who, by investing in these private prison companies, profit from the enforcement of immigration laws and drug laws and mandatory sentencing and so forth.
Well, and quite frankly, even when these private prisons first came about during the Bush-Cheney era, mm-hmm. when they exploded, you may remember that these private prisons had contracts with the federal government.
Correct.
That they would be filled to like at least 85% capacity.
Yes.
At all times.
Yes.
And that's written into the contract.
Yes.
And so now that they have don't have the ability to put as many U.S.-born African-Americans and Latinos and other people mm-hmm. of color and other poor people into those private prisons, they now see this as their money-making opportunity with the immigrant population.
Yes. This has always been about race.
Right.
I can tell you that they were behind the three strikes laws. They were behind the mandatory sentencing and
right.
so forth, which we had in the 90s.
That's right.
They filled up all these prisons. But, you know, people didn't get life terms without parole.
That's
people
right.
died, people got out, and so forth. And they started losing money. Their investors got upset. CCA, in 2000 and 2001, was lobbying the Bureau of Indian Affairs for its new market. They were going to incarcerate a whole bunch of Native people.
On their land. Wow.
And then September 11th happened, mm-hmm. and they shifted to Homeland Security and found a big boon in immigrants. So today, actually last October, the report came out for the first time in history. The majority of prisoners in the federal prison system are now immigrants.
Wow.
Yeah, just past African Americans. But the African American population in the prisons did not drop.
No.
It continues to grow.
Right, right.
It's just that the
not
huge
growing as
wave
fast.
That grew immigrants and now predominantly, of course, Latino.
Right.
And so to stop this, we have to cut off the money.
Right.
And
how does the campaign do that?
The campaign does that by saying we want all institutions, public and private, to divest all connections from private prisons, all financial connections. So your city, your church, your county, your senator, your congressperson,
your retirement fund,
everybody stop propping up this industry. Their money comes from public money. In
right.
other words, they're financed through our pension funds and our cities and the counties and churches and so forth. And that pays for the lobbyists that allocate the money to put the people from communities of color and immigrants in particular behind bars under horrible, horrible conditions. And I should add that the conditions in the private prisons are even worse than in the public prisons.
If you're a woman, the odds of you being raped while you're in are probably about 50-50 now. There have been over 100 wrongful deaths that CCA and GEO have been found liable for. Child abuse, it's pretty awful, the conditions. And I think I would add also to that that we don't have any oversight. In fact, public oversight is illegal under a law passed by Congress late in the Bush administration. You cannot have oversight of a contracted
prison?
Right.
Really? So basically we give them tax dollars and this trust that they're doing what we have contracted them to
do. We give them our money, and it is legally none of our business what they do with it.
Only in America. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Hello, Joanne. Welcome to KBOO.
Yes, Mr. Peter, you said something way back in the program about sexism. And I recognize your work is important, too. But I want equality, too. I want an organization to help people like me and my daughter and our children get out of public housing and get out of Social Security disability income. We have not gotten any help and support from the governments in Oregon or the nonprofits. I want equality now, not when it's convenient for middle-class people to do it. And also, Joanne, a question for you. Are you going to respond to me and say that I need a cup of coffee or take psychiatric drugs? I'll listen off the air.
Oh, Joanne, I've never said one or either of those things to you, so I'm not sure what's going on today. But I do appreciate your call. Do we have another caller on the line? No. Okay, that just looked like we had another caller. And so you are encouraging people to contact their congressional representatives. You're requesting that people sign a petition.
Yes.
That is available on your web. They can go to your web link and get to the petition.
Yes.
And the petition is to Congress, right?
Yes, the petition, because the these private prison companies cannot incarcerate people unjustly without the money that Congress gives them to do just that. And here in Oregon and in Washington, here in Oregon and Washington, we are in actually pretty key places in the United States with respect to this this dynamic. And that is because both of our senators in Oregon and Senator Murray in across the river in Washington are on the Senate Budget Committee. In fact, Senator Murray is the chair of the Senate Budget Committee. And in addition to that, Senator Murray is on the Senate Appropriations Committee. Senator Wyden, in addition to being on the Senate Budget Committee, is on the Senate Finance Committee. And Senator Merkley, in addition to being on the Senate Budget Committee, is on the Senate Appropriations Committee. All of these committees are key, must approve the money that goes to the private prisons to incarcerate immigrants and people of color.
Right.
And these, after whatever happens with comprehensive immigration reform is over in July, the budget is going to be coming up, and after that, appropriations are going to be happening. And these three senators are going to have a lot of power with respect to whether or not our tax dollars are going to go toward unjustly incarcerating and deporting people who, you know, are part of our communities and should stay here.
Yes. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Hello, Cheryl. Welcome to KBOO.
Yeah, it's Cheryl.
Oh, Cheryl. Sorry, Cheryl.
No, that's okay. I just wanted to comment that my son was caught up under Measure 11 in 96, and he's still, once you get in this, they talked him into signing a plea bargain, he was 17, and this cycle of dealing with this label that he has is still going on after all these years, and he has been a work release program in Clackamas County, and he's only been in there since Saturday, and three people have come down with Bell's palsy, which I am going to research, but I don't know why. They don't know why. And so that this is something that, you know, goes on in these places, and these are our own public, you know, facilities. These aren't private here in Oregon, to my knowledge.
No, they're not.
Right. So anyway, I just want to say that I don't know what I would copy down. Is there anything I can go to? The CCA, I copied that down. I just turned on KBOO about 20 minutes ago or 8:15, half hour ago.
Well, you are in luck because this entire program will be available by podcast within 24 hours of this program. In addition, if you go to either KBOO's website, Voices from the Edge, just kboo.fm/voicesfromtheedge.
Okay.
All Peter's contact info is there. His website information is
great.
There. You are going to be so connected. You tuned in at just the right time.
And
I just want to comment on the Measure 11 and all these type of things, immigration reform or whatever is going to go on, is definitely tied into, I believe, once you get incarcerated and you get in the system, my point is you never get out of it. They find a way to throw you in jail for being unemployed, not having housing.
Right.
Crazy notion. That's all I'm going to say.
And now we've got this. Now we've got this idiot legislation at the federal level that would cut food stamps off for people who have been convicted of felonies. It is the only federal program that's available to someone with a felony conviction, and we as a country are going to decide that people don't deserve food after they've been to prison?
Well, you know, all this ties into people scamming the system. This is part of it. I wrote a letter to Kit Hopper, and I got a reply back about the state being mismanaged, and they are doing the food stamp program here in Oregon. I don't know if I was, you know, had anything to do with it. I think it should have just come around, but it's been about a year since I wrote the letter.
Right.
And people using food stamps for drugs. You know, there's things that we have to stop. Those kind of things shouldn't be happening. If you lose your food stamp card, you know, 44 times and, you know, and all this kind of stuff, you need to be cut off. So there needs to be oversight on people scamming the system. Don't get me wrong.
But, I mean,
I
there's
think
both.
That is a big problem.
I don't know. No, I disagree with you. I mean, I think our whole mindset about people being hungry, I mean, our whole mindset is wrong. Right.
Yeah, no, I think people, well, see, that's the trouble. People that scam the system affect people that really need the assistance. I'm a senior, and I'm being affected as a senior and everyone where I live by the fact that, you know, our resources are mismanaged. And so if you, you know, like me, forced into retirement, living on modest Social Security, it's pretty, I'm caught up in the dilemma myself, so that's why I got so angry about it. But,
but
I just think that, you know, we all need to be more responsible, ethical, moral, and, you know, I think we need to get back to self-responsibility. We have too many laws, too many rules, and it takes people's, you know, I mean, I'm thinking, you know, this started decades ago, about us, you know, less and less able to think for ourselves. And I think that is a very scary, you know, thing right there in itself.
Well, I appreciate your call this morning.
You're welcome.
And
thank you for your program. It's been every week, it's always insightful.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad you listen. Have a great day.
Bye.
And so let me tell folks what's coming up this morning on The Boo. At 9, hear a special one-hour edition of Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell. At 10, Eric Cascadia pulls out the call for the release of radical lawyer Lynn Stewart from prison. I'm sorry, puts out the call for the release of radical lawyer Lynn Stewart from prison. That makes more sense. At 10:15, Flashpoint features a powerful speech by Angela Davis given in April in Palestinian Prisoners Day. At 11 on Between the Covers, host David Niemann interviews Lenore Zion about her debate novel, Stupid Children. We want to thank KBOO supporters for their generous contributions to keep the station up and running. If you haven't become a member yet, you can by going to KBOO website at kboo.fm and clicking the tip jar. And if you don't know that we have a pancake breakfast tomorrow morning, Saturday morning, June 1st, at Matt Dishman Community Center, and it's going to be going on from like 9 to 11. And the KBOO volunteers are going to be there in full force. We hope we see you there as well. We have several callers lined up, so we're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Heidi. Welcome to KBOO.
Oh, hey, Joanne.
Hi, Eddie.
I just wanted to talk to folks out there. While I'm trying to appreciate what the previous caller said, I think this goes to the fact that we blame the people that have to deal with the system.
Yes.
I personally, am on food stamps, I have seen every time I make a little increase in my wage, they take a big, huge chunk. So
nice.
There's never a way that you can get ahead. But the problem with this kind of dialogue, when people bring it up and put it back on the people, is the same thing we've seen, and which is what Occupy was trying to articulate for people, that 99% versus the 1%.
Mm-hmm.
And the 1% categorizes and puts people like myself in a certain kind of category and then controls the dialogue and puts out in the media and makes people demonize the very people who are trying to work within the system. Yeah. Even when you work within the system, you're hardworking, you try to get ahead. There is no in-between, and it puts people in a really strange position to try and, like, deal with their values and their ethics and their morals and trying to work within the system and try to do better.
Yes.
And so I just want to make sure that we, and I think you do a really good job on your show, and I just wanted to, you know, let that caller know and other people out there, they want to demonize people that are on food stamps. We need to talk about the systemic issues.
Yes.
And not necessarily categorize individual people. There's always individual people who make poor decisions, and it reflects poorly on the whole. But we need to challenge the systemic issue and not the people who have to deal with the system. And I think that's an important part of the discussion. And I think that you do that really well when I've listened to your program for a long time. But I wanted to remind callers of that as well. So thank you for this important conversation, Joanne. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for your call.
All right. Okay, thanks.
So, yes. Thank you for that comment. I also wanted to add that right now the largest number of prosecutions and incarcerations for immigrants is through a program called Operation Streamline, which is run by the Border Patrol. And it is a parallel judicial system in which the Border Patrol appoints its own judges. People are herded into a courtroom. They don't have their own attorney. There is an attorney that represents them who may or may not be present. And they are forced to do group pleas. So in essence, they're pressured to plead guilty, usually not knowing what they're pleading guilty to. And now they are convicted felons as a result of this process. Many thousands and thousands of people. And so now we have the stigma of being felons.
Right. Now they're immigrants, undocumented immigrants, and felons.
And felons. Right. So they are illegal felons, they're
twice.
Dangerous criminals, et cetera, et cetera. Right. And all they did was stand in a room and nod their head.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to watch very carefully the rhetoric around these laws and the whole subject of incarcerating and deporting people. I just want to add two things. For people who want to do something, to give a plug, there is a fast going on today and tomorrow at St. Andrew's Church. Vos and other organizations are fasting for not one more person lost from the families in the communities, not one more deportation or incarceration. People who want to support could come by. That would be great. And also, the quickest way to get to our petition is prisondivestment.wordpress.com.
Excellent. All right, we got another call on the line. Hello, Marie. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I hope you wouldn't mind. The first thing, could you please repeat prison divestment? I was writing down. Please repeat that one more time.
Prisondivestment.wordpress.com.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. Okay, I am very grateful for this program. Yay, Joanne, you're the best.
Thank you.
I'm so grateful that really a lot of Anglos need more immigration education. There's a lot of confusion.
Yes.
So this is a really good program. And honestly, I really believe we need more of these. And I think ideally one a week. And I wrote down a couple notes here. And I'm just going to go back to Joanne for a minute. When Joanne mentioned the housing issue, mm-hmm. I wrote down housing together. Many of us, Hispanics, Anglos, all have housing issues. So many Anglos may not understand. We need to all work together.
Yes.
It's the same fight.
That's right.
Then on to the Bell's palsy, something many people don't know, and it's related to a program we had. We had a program about electronic sensitivity, and I mentioned I'm praying and I'm hoping that KBOO could do a regular program combining electronic sensitivity with chemical sensitivity, with information on mercury. Many people exposed to bad air, like in prisons where they're closed in air, they can actually, people can get Bell's palsy from having mercury fillings. It's documented information. Also, breathing a lot of bad air that's not fresh air can actually, people can actually, just like secondary smoke, there's, it's, this is an unknown issue. Then thirdly, on to the prisons and ICE prisons. What food are they getting in those prisons? And this relates to a program we had a week or two ago about GMO food. And this is going to be my final point. It kind of might climax of the whole thing, that GMO food does cause genetic damage. So people in prisons everywhere hopefully someday can do lawsuits because they're being fed terrible food in prisons. But we all, just like, I forgot, Leonard Peltier, I think, anyway, one of these famous people in prison, say we're all in prison, that by us, all of us eating and choosing to keep buying GMO food, we're hurting ourselves. But this is an immigration issue because many of the immigrants are exposed to such terrible pesticides, and so we're all in this net together. If we can all buy organic food together, we can all be freeing ourselves. And the last point on the terrible child hunger issue, which we think of as summer children hunger issue, I have a challenge and I have a dream that churches, that we could be doing some kind of community suppers, at least two a week, like a Friday, Saturday, but it would need to be organic food. I think many Christians do not understand the link between organic food and immigration issues. It's a story that needs to be told. And thank you for cable, and thank you very much, guest Peter. You all are just so wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you for that comment, and I can tell you that in the private prisons, the food is terrible, although it gets worse for some people. We've talked with people who have been in who, in fact, didn't get fed and ended up having to steal food out of garbage cans just to get something in their stomachs.
Wow.
And, of course, get sick and so forth. So you're absolutely right. The conditions are horrible. And,
well, and you may remember that there was a scandal in Oregon prisons around food, where the guy was buying food that was already spoiled and serving it to prisoners, and he was making money on the side. And I'm not sure if he's ever been prosecuted. I thought he absconded and left his wife to face the charges. But I could be wrong. I doubt it, though. So, Peter, this has been such an informative conversation. It is clear that the work that you're doing is so necessary. What do you think the barriers are to actually having more success? Because you would think that with all the factories that have been destroyed of lately, with workers killed because of really poor working conditions, factories that are making U.S. garments in Bangladesh and in other locations around the world, this is becoming more of the norm.
Well,
and so you would think that we would be turning a corner.
Well, we turn a corner when people speak up. And when people don't speak up, we don't turn a corner.
Right.
So in this case, for example, as long as Senator Wyden, Senator Merkley, Senator Murray, Congressman Blumenauer and Bonamici, as long as they don't hear that their constituents oppose this and say, do not put our money into abusing people from our community and through private prisons, as long as they don't hear enough of that, they'll keep voting for it.
That's
and
right.
when they hear enough people say, don't do that with our, that's immoral, that's not with our money, not to our communities, when they hear enough people say that, they'll do the right thing. But they need to hear enough people say that, not just the facts. They need to hear, we have to sign the petitions, get the friends to engage. That's the only way it can work.
It's the only way it can work. I think that's an absolutely true point. And it is clear that we need to make sure that as congregants adjourns for the summer and they start setting up town hall meetings in our local communities, that we're out asking those hard questions. I get frustrated when we have these town hall meetings because they tend to be, let me tell you what a great, wonderful job I'm doing for you, as compared to what are the critical issues that that I don't know about,
right?
Because I'm like in the Beltway, and mm-hmm. I'm only surrounded by people that tell me I'm great and wonderful, right? What's really
and
going
give me
on?
Money.
And give me money, right? So that I can get reelected again, right, to continue to be great and wonderful, mm-hmm. right? And so we certainly have work to do. And I love what one of our callers said, which is, all of these struggles are interconnected.
Yes, they are.
And the more we as community members see this as, this is the Latino struggle, or this is the Black struggle, or this is the poor white people's mm-hmm. struggle, as long as we continue to segregate our struggles, the powers that be win. Because as long as they can divide and conquer us, they can keep doing what they've always been doing.
That's right.
And then we continue to say, well, that's not fair. And what about me, the poor income white person? What about me? We started the conversation with a white guy that says, hey, you know, I'm poor. I'm struggling.
Right.
Right? And so what we know is that 99% of us are struggling.
Yes.
But it's time for us to figure out the kind of country we want to build. Because I got to tell you, the folks in Congress don't speak for me. Those are idiots. They're all pretty much idiots. Thank God we've got Susan Bonamici and Jeff Merkley. Because if those two weren't there, I would think that Congress was just doomed. But that's just my humble opinion. And so, Peter, are there any other events that are coming up for Enlace that we should tell people about?
Keep checking our website. There will be some. Right now, we really need to get as many people as possible, because time is of the essence. Mm-hmm. To sign that petition, get your family, friends, everybody you can to sign that petition, and to tell our elected representatives, do not put our money into private prisons, mm-hmm. not one dime.
One of the things that I love about your organizing effort is that you're reaching out to faith-based communities, you're reaching out to community-based mm-hmm. nonprofit organizations, you're reaching out to even very new groups like the new Jim Crow group, mm-hmm. right? And so your goal is to build this really multicultural, multiracial, multigenerational, multi-income movement. Right, that understands the interconnectedness of these issues.
The truth is that we are all in this together, and all of us have a relationship with some kind of institution that is using our money for ill, right, without knowing it.
Right.
So we can put a stop to it.
You know, in addition to the last caller was talking about our food supply, and on mm-hmm. my way in this morning, I was listening to Amy Goodman talk about a company in China who's about to buy one of the biggest
Smithfield,
right? And so the dynamic of just having that shift, having mm-hmm. another country start mm-hmm. controlling our meat supply, mm-hmm. right? So one part of our meat supply should start people thinking more about, do we really want to go down that road, right? Or are we really going to talk about how do we grow our own food and prepare our own food, and how do we make that as local as possible? Because, of course, we know the closer the food is to where it's produced, the fresher it is and the better it is for us.
And the more control we have over our own lives.
Yes, yes. Because we just found out we've got some wheat that we're not supposed to have.
That's right.
Right? So this has been an informative conversation. I'm really excited to have the opportunity to learn more about Enlace. I want to make sure that we give you an opportunity to come back later, and we can talk about where the campaign is and mm-hmm. what the next steps are. Peter, it's been my pleasure. Any parting words you want to tell our audience?
Just thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. I really appreciate the opportunity. And again, it's prisondivestment.wordpress.com.
Yes, and I will also add that information to both the Facebook and the KBOO/Voices from the Edge website. And again, within 24 hours, the podcast will be available for download. And it's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Joanne.
So I am Joanne Hardesty. I am your host here at Voices from the Edge. And I hope I will see you Saturday morning starting at 7 a.m. for KBOO's Pancake Breakfast, celebrating 45 years of community radio. See you next week. Same time, same place, same station. Have a great day.
Stand up for your right. Get up.
the fight. Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that bitter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Sky. Take away everything and make everybody feel high.
And good morning from KBOO Portland. It is just a minute before 9 o'clock on this Thursday morning. Coming up at 10 this morning on Air Cascadia, today, Chris Andre will put out the call for the release of radical lawyer Lynn Stewart from prison with guests Ralph Pointer and Noel Hanrahan. At 10:15, Flashpoints features a powerful speech by Angela Davis, given in April to commemorate Palestinian Prison Day. At 11, on Between the Covers, host David Naiman interviews Lenore Zion about her debut novel, Stupid Children, a story inspired by Catherine Dunn's novel, Geek Love. And at 11:30 on the Radio Zine, host Don Merrill speaks with reporter Jonathan Shoup about his new book, A Chance to Win, and a man who got a bunch of inner-city kids interested in forming a sports team. But first, it's a special one-hour edition of Press Watch. It's news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell, and that's coming up next on KBOO.
From farms in Oregon's fertile Willamette Valley to the food desert of inner-city Richmond, California, a new documentary film, Gaining Ground, reveals the ingenuity and courage of urban and rural farmers committed to serving and empowering their communities.
Boy, unless people figure out that we need to feed our neighbors locally and sustainably, I don't know what they're going to be farming in a few years.
We live in a classic food desert. People go to their liquor stores, their corner stores, whatever. Food is an issue.
On Saturday, June 1st at 7 p.m., the Media Project presents a short preview of Gaining Ground, a film by Elaine Velasquez and KBOO host Barbara Bernstein. This benefit to raise finishing funds for the film takes place at the Fifth Avenue Cinema, 510 Southwest Hall Street in downtown Portland. This event is sponsored by KBOO Community Radio, Food and Water Watch, Portland Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and the West Multnomah Soil and Water Conservation District. More information can be found online at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the events page.
This Thursday, May 30th at 10 a.m., join me, Chris Andre, on Air Cascadia with special guests Ralph Pointer and Noel Hanrahan of the Prison Radio Project as we put out the call for compassionate release on behalf of radical lawyer Lynn Stewart. Be there.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
Also, thanks to a underwriting from a grant from Merrill Hurst University's new Bachelor of Arts in Media and Film Studies, where you can explore how media in all forms affect not only how we view the world, but how we shape it. You'll learn the power of media and how you can use that power to become a participant in change. Now accepting applications. Details at merrillhurst.edu/KBOO.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Well, you may have heard that there were demonstrations against Monsanto. Indeed, there were worldwide, and millions participated. It's one of those things that Monsanto pops up in the news as well when Monsanto wheat was found in Oregon. Perhaps you heard about that. Got a bit more press, but still needs to be emphasized, I think. This from grist.org news. A farmer in Oregon found a patch of wheat growing like a weed where it wasn't expected. So the farmer sprayed it with the herbicide Roundup. And this is just me saying this, but that's gotten to be normal. Yeah, sprayed it. So he sprayed it. But some of the wheat survived, so startled farmers sent samples of the renegade wheat to a laboratory, which confirmed something that should have been impossible. The wheat was a genetically engineered variety that had never been approved to be grown in the U.S. nor anywhere else in the world. It was Franken wheat. And guess where it came from? Your friend Monsanto. New York Times said the agricultural department said the wheat was of a type developed by Monsanto to be resistant to the herbicide Roundup, also known as glyphosate. Such wheat was field tested in 16 states, including Oregon, from 1998 through 2005, but Monsanto dropped the project before the wheat was ever approved for commercial planting. The department said it is not known yet whether any of the wheat got into the food supply or into grain shipments. Even if it did, officials said, it would pose no threat to health. The Food and Drug Administration reviewed the wheat and found no safety problems with it in 2004. Are you feel safe? But returning to New York Times, as quoted in Grist, still, the mere presence of the genetically modified plant could cause some countries to turn away exports of American wheat, especially if any traces of the unapproved grain were found in shipments. About 8.1 billion in American wheat was exported in 2012, representing nearly half of the total 17.9 billion crop, according to U.S. Wheat Associates, which promotes American wheat abroad. About 90% of Oregon's wheat crop is exported. And there's more on that. You can find it at grist.org news, illegal Monsanto GMO wheat found in Oregon. And the thing is, this means that American wheat, and especially Oregon wheat, is being tested all over the world. Wherever it has been shipped, it is being tested for Franken wheat. And of course, it's going to be in there. I mean, there's no way it's not. Think about it. This stuff.